You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. But wanting my cake and eat it too. And wanting it both ways, fame made me a balloon. Cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. But it was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of loose leaf, abuse ink. Use it as a tool when I blew sleep. Woo! Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get, it was bittersweet. It's like winning, they used me. I'm blinded cause I think I'm getting so huge. I need a shrink, I'm beginning to lose sleep. One sheep, two sheep, going cuckoo and kooky is cool key. But I'm actually weirder than you think, cause I'm
friends with the monster.
A very good Tuesday morning to you. Mike McMurray for Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. You're home for it. Hope you're having a good one. Tell you what we're going to do today. We are going to talk to Chris Woodbridge, Colonel, United States Marine Corps. He publishes the Marine Corps Gazette. So we're going to do a couple little things with him. I sent him an email yesterday, and I said, hey, Woody, you know, this month, by fate and by the coincidence of the calendar, you know, you have three huge battles in Marine Corps history. You have obviously Iwo Jima, which the landing commenced yesterday. If you ever want to read some interesting reading, read about the couple days prior to the landing when we had some, the reconnaissance effort just get hammered off the east coast of the island. So yeah, if you ever want a if you want something interesting, go ahead and check that out. Pretty interesting. Yeah, it did not go according to plan. Anyway, but so he's going to come on, and I asked him. I said, "Hey, I want to talk about the archives that you guys have, your digital archives." Because I've said this before, and I'll say it again right now. If you ever want to, do some interesting reading, pick a subject that you're interested in, and go back in the Marine Corps archives and look at all the different people that have written about it. So especially like after battles like Hue, after battles like Khe Sanh. Go ahead and check those out. And again, the coolest part of the articles is the pronouns that get used are I, we, all that kind of stuff. It is not they, you know, it's not written in the third person. It's written in the first and second person. So I said, hey, would you pick, something that you find interesting on each one of those subjects, and when you show up today? He said, I'll do that. So we'll talk to Chris Woodbridge about the February edition of the Marine Corps Gazette a little bit late this month, but better late than sorry. Probably better late than never. So we'll do that. In the next, let's see, we'll check the news headlines pretty quick this morning. And then we'll go ahead and listen to some audio. One is, if you watch the Super Bowl, you saw a Marine by the name of Woody Williams, recipient of the Medal of Honor from the fighting in Iwo Jima. So you'll hear his story. And pretty impressive story of his action with his flamethrower on February 23rd, the day the flag went up. You'll also hear some more news, and you'll hear the news, a report filed on D+3. So it's about a 10-minute broadcast, and so you'll hear that. You'll hear that as well. And so as we continue to take a look at Iwo Jima, you know, one of the interesting things that you see when you, as you know, I look for different things, is, you know, there's a lot of people that have done oral histories, but you know, I will tell you honestly, the sad part when I begin to listen to them is that they weren't done by me. And I know if you're listening, you just went, what the hell did he just say? And when I say me, what I mean is there's a certain comfort level that veterans feel in the company of other veterans, and they will tend to talk about things with other veterans that they don't talk about with, you know, their Aunt Lucy and whatnot. And the problem with these oral history projects are somebody downloads an outline, and then they sit down with a veteran and they record something. And again, the good part is they recorded something. The bad part is it's not nearly what it could be. You know, it's not, because they're reluctant to talk about, as people that have listened to the program know, they're reluctant to talk about, you know, the things that happen, stuff that we would find so common and, you know, and part of our world, they would, you know, recoil, you know, to tell their Aunt Lucy about it. So I was listening to a couple from a, you know, from an oral history project, and I went, oh, man, you know, such rich subject matter, platoon sergeant on Iwo Jima, you know, and he essentially talks about, here's where I went, here's what I did, and not, I think, what we certainly would want to hear, and that is, what happened, what did you feel, in kind of high definition. So, but you'll hear a news report from day three of the battle. And what's interesting about the report is they're talking about trying to get to the D1 line. And then, in addition to musing about getting to the D1 line or talking about, he then talks about, you know, once they get to the D1 line, it might be a few more days. And so even at D+3, almost, you know, still hadn't set in on them how long the fight was going to be. And that fight pales in comparison when you think about the fight on Okinawa, which lasted for a long, 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 long time. So, good morning to you out there. It's cold in California. It's down in the 40s here along the coast, which is barbaric, for God's sake. Good morning. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Thank you. And again, dedicated to Marines that went ashore on Iwo Jima. As I go through their history and I read their accounts, and you just shake your head. Thunderdome, right? 4 square miles, 60,000 combatants on the island, and essentially no prisoners taken. Yeah. Modern day Thunderdome. Japanese below ground, Marines above ground. And it's interesting, as you in some of the accounts you'll hear guys try to describe that in their accounts. And you can imagine the American public listening, saying, what? There's nobody above ground? What is that? So, dedicated to the memory of many of them and to those that are living. If you were 18 or 19, 73 years ago, that makes you easily 90 years old if you were one of the younger guys on the island. So their numbers continue to dwindle, but they've been an incredible example to the rest of us for a long, long time. So with that said, this is dedicated to them.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars. If you don't get the resources, my closing words, then your strategy is nothing more than a hallucination, because without the resources, there's just so much brave young men and women can do.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Love that we got to win shit. Currently cloudy and 62 in Quantico, warming right up. Wow. Camp Lejeune, cloudy and 73. Granbury, Texas, cloudy 67. Big Timber, Montana, clouds and 12 degrees below zero in Montana. 29 Palms, clear and 31. 31 in the high desert. Hope they had good sleeping bags last night, boys. Kent Pendleton, sunny and 30.
What?
Yeah. Okinawa, cloudy, dark, 68. Warming up. A couple of storm warnings in effect in the western Pacific. Marja, clear, dark, and 67. At the home of All Marine Radio. Sunny and 39. Feels like 35. Head for a high of 60 today, 60 tomorrow, and 58 with rain on Thursday. Winter is here, officially. What the hell? All right, we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it. Bob Nielsen, the man, the myth, the legend, just had a birthday. A couple things. If you know people that are looking for, work, then Turner Construction. And again, it's not being a construction guy. It's being, they need logisticians, they need operations people, they need administrators. But what they're looking for is leaders. Okay? They're looking for leaders. So if you've led Turner Construction's worldwide construction company, it's veteran friendly. And so, if you know somebody that's getting out, if you're in a suck ass job, contact us. Just listen to Nielsen here and do what he tells you to do. They just hired another, I think, former corpsman. So, Turner Construction. If you're interested, also Amazon, shoot me an email. Okay? Here at All Marine Radio. And I'll put you in touch with Bo Higgins at Amazon. So Amazon, you've heard of them? Yeah. He's one of the principals in the military talent acquisition branch. And they're looking for you. They know you've answered to a higher state of discipline, a higher state of performance than most people your age, and they're looking for you. So there you have it. All Marine Radio, trying to help people find jobs. Stand by for the explosion.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Time to check the news here on a Tuesday. All right, Marine Corps Times first, then we'll do Early Bird, and then Stars and Stripes, and Task and Purpose. So, top story in Marine Corps Times. Veterans groups rally around Secretary amid rumors of looming dismissal. Yeah, you know, when the IG comes out and hammers you that not only did you do something wrong, you lied about it, it's tough to keep your job. Veterans groups are scrambling to show support for VA Secretary David Shulkin amid reports that the White House may be considering forcing him out of the job over a series of internal fights with administration staffers. Quote, "We have been encouraged at the great progress Secretary Shulkin has made and believe that he remains the best person to lead this important federal public institution on behalf of the American people," said the commander of the American Legion, Denise Rohan, in a statement on Monday. "While we were disappointed to learn of the recent issue with the Secretary's travel, we believe that the current controversy surrounding the Secretary is part of a larger effort to remove him and install others who would take steps to privatize the services provided to our nation's heroes by the Department of Veterans Affairs. I don't know that I'm against privatization. Does it deliver better? I just don't see the need for a completely separate hospital system for veterans, except one, maybe long-term care for the indigent, two, burns, three, PTSD, and other combat-related maladies. Give us a VA card, a Medicare card, like Medicare. Let us go to private doctors. I don't see the need to have this separate system, and especially when it delivers subpar care. And then it goes on to talk about the IG. So I'd be curious to hear the pros and cons about privatizing pieces of the VA. The VA should be world-class in burns, because in combat you see a lot of that. They should be world-class in prosthetics. They should be world-class in mental health. The rest of it, urology, dermatology, I mean, you can do that anywhere. Anyway, so he's in trouble. And so the political fight is on to save his ass. Next story, ISIS ambushes Shiite-led force, killing 27 fighters. Obviously, ISIS is letting people know that they're not going away. This is what they did before they had territory, and they will return to that. The Dateline says Baghdad. Islamic State militants ambushed a group of Shiite-led paramilitary fighters, killing at least 27. More than 2 months after Baghdad declared victory over the extremist group, the Popular Mobilization Forces, an umbrella group of mostly Shiite militias, said in a statement the attack took place southwest of the northern city of Kirkuk. Paramilitaries were conducting overnight raids. Wow. Now, I will tell you this. Sometimes you bump into somebody and all of a sudden you get this huge stand and fight event. And that's an indication that I don't know who you were about to bump into, but he rolls with a lot of people and they're willing to fight and die, which is not normally the way they do it. The article goes on. The attackers were disguised in army uniforms and manning a fake checkpoint, the statement said, adding that ensuing clashes lasted for at least 2 hours. Some of the militants were killed while others fled the area. So interesting. That's a lot of people to kill. But that is the primary vehicle in which deadly attacks get delivered in both Afghanistan and now in Iraq, and that is steal uniforms, impersonate them, and then go ahead and kill them. So ISIS not going away. And again, this is what they do and can do forever. You know, them in the real estate business, not so much. There's also a story in Navy Times about the Iwo Jima campaign. The title is Gunboats in Hell, Battle of Iwo Jima. And it's written by a guy named Mitch Weiss, who writes for World War II magazine. And the story takes place on February 17th. I talked to you about the pre-invasion operations. And I'll just read you a little bit about it. The day dawns clear and bright off Iwo Jima, 10:45. That morning, Lieutenant J.G. Rufus Herring, aboard the LCI 449, peered through binoculars at the tiny island some distance away. Iwo's rocky coastline, deep gorges, and high ridges no doubt bristled with Japanese machine guns and rocket launchers, with masses of soldiers dug in at field pieces. The Marines had their work cut out for them, but before they could do their work, Herring's flotilla of gunboats had a job to do. Herring worried most about Suribachi. The dark gray mountain towered 550 feet, heavy artillery and menace engineered into the natural fortress of a long-dormant volcano on Iwo's southern end. he knew that from the crest of the crest, the Japanese had just as detailed a view of his force and beyond the gunboats, the waiting American fleet of battleships, cruisers, and destroyers. Only a line of destroyers was near the coast on February 17th, 2 days before the landing. Herring's little command, flotilla 3 of Group 8, 12 skinny vessels proceeding slowly in the direction of Suribachi, near enough the shore to be in deep trouble if enemy gunners were to open fire. Once they crossed the line of departure, there was no turning back. Flotilla 3 had a critical mission, supporting U.S. Navy commandos on reconnaissance. In 2 days, the fleet behind them would assault Iwo Jima. Right now, Herring and his ships, landing craft infantry, LCI, repurposed into gunboats, were to hug the target's shore, which is Suribachi, and provide cover for the UDT, Navy frogmen, that were going to conduct special operations assigned to disable any mines, and then scout the beaches in the vicinity of Suribachi to make sure that tanks and other heavy equipment could traverse the sandy black beaches. You can read the whole article, but they got hammered. They got hammered, and they didn't quit. They didn't quit. They hung in there and they fought at their own great expense. So interesting article. Top five stories in the early bird. One, Mattis deployer get out is about fairness. You know, this is the kind of stuff that happens when you have somebody who's not that far away from active duty. They know the nonsense that goes on. You bring a politician in there and they would listen to this. They'd be like, oh, okay, we have other bigger things to do. But, you know, there's tons of people that hide on active duty, right? Tons of people that don't deploy. And you run into them, you're like, what? Yeah, so, look, I think you talk to most people that are on active duty, deploy or get out, they're like, hell yeah. If you're non-deployable, what are you doing in the military? You're collecting a paycheck while the rest of us deploy. So get your ass out of here. The Russians warned the United States not to play with fire in the Syrian conflict. And essentially what they're talking about is Russia, along with Syria, is now attempting to deal with the Kurds, right, as the Turks are. So we'll see what happens. The Navy continues its fight against cockpit oxygen lost. So it's been this ongoing fight with the Navy. High in the sky, in several airframes, more and more pilots are getting dizzy in the cockpit. They were disoriented. They couldn't breathe. And they became confused, imperiling lives, multi-million dollar jets, and readiness in the process. The Navy has in the past year redoubled its effort to disentangle the complex causes behind PE, which is physiological episodes, which primarily involves oxygen loss in the cockpit, but can include decompression sickness and other problems. All right, so we're going to get Knowles or Joey Perazzo on to talk about this. Because you read about it all the time. Is it an experience issue, or is it something else? Article in Politico this morning, the war America isn't fighting. Ash Carter. I was never really impressed with Ash Carter, right? Career bureaucrat. Former Secretary of Defense tells us about his Pentagon plan to counter Russia and why both Obama and Trump have failed to execute it. Okay, so that's in the news. Middle East military force, act now, beg forgiveness later. This is in defense news. A debate that permeated a congressional panel at a Munich security conference is the same question that often permeates Washington, whether an administration should seek congressional authorization for military acts of deterrence. One attendee addressed the panel at the conference said he winced at the thought of U.S. failed actions in Syria, seeing, quote, that Operation Unravel, micromanage, looked over, and then the Russians stepped in, and the rest is contemporary history. Yeah, so film at 11. Now the Russians control Syria. Stars and Stripes. South Korea and the United States say joint war games will be held after the Olympics as planned. Navy sending two destroyers to the Black Sea. And tomorrow, the Pentagon's expected to unveil their new policy on transgender troops. Another headline just caught my eye. And you know what? I'm scrolling. It says, 11 years later, grief remains. It wouldn't have been 11 years later. I know somebody whose daughter went to the Naval Academy who was killed. Who was killed in Iraq and whose daughter got an appointment to the Naval Academy. And but I've already, like, viewed, evidently, Stars and Stripes too much this month. So now I'm blocked until my time limit resets. But that only works if I stay in the same browser. So if you're smart and you have more than one browser on your computer, grief is supposed to get easier with time, or so we're told, for Raymond Harris. So far, that is not the case. His daughter, Marine Captain Jennifer Harris, was killed 11 years ago this month when the Sea-Night helicopter she was piloting was shot down in Iraq. All seven people on board were killed. Every day is hard for me. People say it's going to get better, and it doesn't. Wow. I thought it was somebody else. All right. From Task and Purpose, top headline, the knives are out for VA Secretary Shulkin. So, again, that IG report, his response to it was quizzical. I guess it's more easily explained now, as there is some kind of power struggle going on at the VA. That the rest of us don't know about, that they do. So, interesting. This guy's got pretty good reviews from the people I know that work there. And the other interesting story in Task and Purpose this morning is command failures led to Niger ambush, explosive report shows. So let me just take you through this a little bit. And see if there's a we've had Richard Sisk on. He's a Vietnam veteran, and he writes this article. Maybe we'll see if he'll come back on. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said Saturday that the Pentagon investigation of the Niger ambush, in which four American troops were killed, is close to being wrapped up. But that was before the New York Times published a detailed and damning report based partly on the video of the firefight. On his plane back to the U.S. following a week-long trip to Europe, Mattis told reporters traveling with him that Marine General Tom Waldhauser, the AFRICOM commander, has an unspecified timeline for completing his review of the draft and the Article 15 TAC 6 fact-finding investigation. However, it is unclear whether Waldhauser's timeline could be affected by the New York Times report on Sunday, which contradicted previous Pentagon and AFRICOM accounts of a joint patrol on October 4th, with Nigerian troops, that resulted in the ambush outside of a village in Tongo Tongo in northwestern Niger. The Times reported that AFCOM poorly planned the joint patrol and then changed the mission three times while it was underway, leading to the deaths of four Americans, four Nigerian troops, and an interpreter. All right. What was to have been a routine operation with little risk turned into a raid on a terrorist base to capture a militant leader carried out by troops lacking air or ground backup and who were unprepared and ill-equipped for the task, the Times reported. So we'll get in touch with Richard Sisk, and we'll get a few more details on that. All right, the I want to play for you some audio. And is a D+3 report from Iwo Jima. So here you go. Okay, remember, today would be D+1. All right, so this was filed 2 days from now.
As we look over on this ridge, the Marines have paths cut up the side of it to the top where the Japs are entrenched. You probably hear the sound of that rocket barrage went off just then over on the ridge. And there's a scene of violent activity there as these Marines are going up and down that ridge, carrying supplies up to the men on the front lines and bringing casualties back out. And there are casualties, too. There are plenty of them. The losses have been very heavy in securing this island of Iwo Jima, this sulfur island, much heavier than had been anticipated. Two complete Marine divisions have been put ashore on this island, which comprises less than 15 square miles. And it has already taken 3 days of intense, severe, bloody fighting to secure not even a quarter of the island. However, it was hoped today to reach the Objective 2 line, and then it was thought the island might be secured in an additional 2 days. But that isn't possible anymore. At this hour of the afternoon, it's about 1:30 now, Iwo Jima time, it has been practically given up the idea of taking the O2 line. In fact, I imagine if we can get through to the O1 line today, that'll be considered satisfactory progress. So when the island will be secured, we don't know. That's one of the Marine fighter planes just passed overhead. He's on his way back to his base to get a new supply of rockets. I notice he has rocket brackets on, but they are empty. A terrific bombardment just went on over that ridge. You wonder how the Japs could, or how anybody could remain alive under such terrific pounding that they've been taking during the past weeks, and particularly during the 3 days since the landing was first made. When you see those entrenchments they have made, you can understand a little bit how difficult it is to get them out. Each one of these pillboxes, each one of these battlements must be broached individually and the men wiped out singly. Now, ridge ahead where the fighting is going on right now is wreathed in smoke from the bursting of the bombs and the rockets. You can probably hear those planes strafing over there now. Well, they were strafing while we were talking to you, but they've stopped now. It's difficult to pick up the small arms fire because there isn't a great deal of that going on. Just a small amount of it. In fact, the majority of the fight is being carried out by these planes and by naval gunfire from these scores of ships laying out at sea. Quite a few planes are circling over that ridge. There's a new flight of about 15 or 20 of them coming in now from the south. And whether or not they're going to let loose on the battlements up there, we don't know. We'll just wait around a while and see. As we told you, this island is only 660 miles from Japan proper, and it's only, it's less than 200 miles from Chichijima, which is another one of Japan's strongest naval and air bases in these volcano islands. And up to now, we haven't had any air opposition whatsoever. There hasn't been a single Japanese plane appear over the island. We did have a couple of alerts just prior to D-Day and on D-Day, but the screen of warships and carriers that Uncle Sam has placed out here around this island have been successful in warding off those attacks. And so far, no one has come ashore. There is no one, no Japanese plane has appeared over the island. We look down on the beach again, which we just left a short while ago. It presents an entirely different scene from that which we saw earlier this morning. The beach is almost completely covered with men now. However, from where we're standing, you can just see the tops of their heads. They're all dug in into their foxholes. You can just see the tops of their helmets. However, there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of them milling around down there on the beach. That is, the supplies are brought in on the beach. These men men take care of distributing them and bringing them up to the front line. Then through heavy ordnance and vehicles such as tanks and tractors and jeeps and trucks are repaired down there in these bivouac areas and sent back into action again. You can probably hear these planes circling overhead. So far, they haven't gone to work yet on those emplacements. At least, not this particular group, but there might have been another group come in with strafing attack while we were talking to you, because there was even a heavier pall of smoke hanging over that ridge. The men haven't advanced too far today, but they have made gains. In fact, I believe they're going to do some... on the Jap emplacements. Put them over the ridge from us and you can't hear them very well. There go two more planes down. The sound of those motors is too loud for you to hear very much the sound of those rockets. There goes another plane down. Let's see if we can hear it. You heard that one, all right. That was a little bit closer. That landed on this side of the ridge, probably somewhere near the front of the Japanese lines. Plane circles around and goes back off to sea then and makes a wide circle and comes back in again. There are several planes in the sky overhead now, and they all seem to be making runs in. There goes a straight plane. It got rid of its... It's rounds for that run and it's gone back out to sea. And there goes another rocket plane down. It's interesting to watch these things if you're on the right side of the fence. I wouldn't care to be a Japanese and watching it right now. These planes peel off in the same way as a dive bomber does, heads down directly toward its target. Then under each wing, you see a bright spot of light. And then a trail of fire and smoke comes out the front of the plane, pulls ahead and down into the ground. You hear that terrible rushing, tearing sound as these rockets go down, and a terrific concussion as the rockets explode. You can probably hear, too, the sharper cracks of the heavy projectiles from the naval units laying out at sea. The sky is still black with planes hovering back and forth over that ridge. We see another plane going down on a straight and run up near the western side of the ridge, a little bit too far away for you to hear it. These planes are giving the Marines real support, the kind they need and the kind they deserve. However, as we said, you can't get the Japanese out of these pillboxes with air power alone. There goes another pair of rockets right in front of them. You probably heard that all right, and there goes another salvo of them. Just over the other side of the ridge from our position. As the planes come down in time toward the top of the ridge, let those rockets go just barely above the surface of the ground. And now we see the huge columns of smoke coming up from the other side of the ridge. Just after that crash plane let its rockets go, another plane came over and dropped a pair of bombs in the same spot. And there's a terrific amount of smoke going up now. It looks as though the planes might have been able to set off one of the Japanese ammunition dumps over there, or a fuel dump or something. We ducked for a minute. You probably heard that sound. We thought it was an enemy mortar that was flopping over our head and hit on the port of us, and we sort of hit the deck for a while there, but it was one of our own mortars sending a projectile back over the Japanese lines, for which we're thankful. Well, that's about the picture for now. The sea is still covered with hundreds of ships of all sizes and all types, merchant vessels, supply ships, and a good sprinkling of naval warships themselves.
Remember, this is D plus three, trying to get to the D1 line.
On the southern end of the island, they're still working on hot rocks. Although that volcano itself doesn't seem to have been giving too much trouble, so far as our part of the island is concerned. As we mentioned in earlier broadcasts, that bivouac area along the beach there is all completely under the guns on hot rocks, but they haven't been subjected to any fire from it. still, the naval vessels are lying just a few hundred yards offshore and pouring salvo after salvo in through the sides of that mountain. Also, the rocket planes are giving it a very thorough work working over today, as they did all day yesterday. We can see tiny cave holes in the side of the mountain. They don't seem large enough to house very big guns, but obviously not, because it's from the direction of hot rocks. The shots were going out into the sea toward these cruisers and destroyers out there. Hot rocks itself is smoking as though it were full of molten lava and its own sulfurous smoke coming out through numerous crannies all over its outer coating. However, that is not the case. It's the result of this terrific bombing it's undergoing. They've been using a lot of white phosphorus bombs on there, and as I mentioned, I think, in an earlier broadcast, those are beautiful things to see. The bomb explodes in a huge puff of white smoke in the air, and from the white smoke, hundreds of fingers of flame shoot out toward the objective. If you can appreciate that sort of thing in a setting like this, why, there it is. Personally, we'd rather see it in the newsreel. And we imagine the Japanese up in Hot Rocks would rather see it back in Tokyo somewhere, and they probably will see it back in Tokyo before too long.
From Island X, soon to be known to everybody as Iwo Jima, D+3 reporting. So, I love that kind of stuff. You're going to hear now from Woody Williams. He flipped a coin here recently at the Super Bowl. The NFL's attempt to placate veterans, I think. He Medal of Honor recipient, on Iwo Jima, real name Herschel. And he did it carrying a flamethrower. So the Medal of Honor Society does a great job in recording and capturing them. And here is Woody Williams, Corporal, United States Marine Corps, on the actions of February 23rd, 1945.
I had been in the Civilian Conservation Corps. That was my first experience to pre-military, if you will. They were a little bit military. The Civilian Conservation Corps was regulated by the Army, but we worked in civilian jobs off the Army base. And I had been in there for about a year and a half when Pearl Harbor happened. And I, along with a lot of other Americans, thought, well, if our country is threatened and we're going to lose our freedom, then we're going to go fight. So I requested my release from the Civilian Conservation Corps and went home to enlist in the Marine Corps.
To a young man eager to defend his country, the bitter fighting against the Japanese on the island of Iwo Jima must have seemed a hell out of all proportion to duty. But as a Marine demolition operator, Corporal Herschel Williams carried with him a hell of his own. A terrible weapon capable of evening the odds in one of the war's bloodiest engagements.
When we got to Iwo Jima, they told us that we probably would never even get off ship because we were a reserve division. The other two divisions had roughly 20,000 people in each, making 40,000 Marines that were going to be on that wee little island. So they had no idea they would ever need us. After they lost something like 5,000 on the first day, they decided they were going to have more people. One of the reasons that...
He said 75,000, but, 7,500 probably. There weren't 75,000 people on the island.
Iwo was so terrible. The Japanese had airfields there that they had built, and the airfields had been protected by reinforced concrete pillboxes. And they had used a lot of steel in those so that bombs could not break them up. They had piled a lot of sand on each top so that when the bomb hit or the artillery hit or whatever, it would blow a lot of sand in a lot of directions, but it didn't do much for the pillbox. So the pillboxes had us stalled. And as we were trying to get across that airfield, we were losing Marines very rapidly. And sometimes even commanding officers get desperate. So, losing men rapidly, he asked me if I thought I could do anything about those pillboxes that were out there. Somebody in my unit said, I'll try. Now, maybe I did say that. Sounds like me, you know. But I don't know whether I said that or not. But anyway, he assigned me some 4 rifle people, and they were to give me protection while I was out there trying to knock out some of those pillboxes. I hadn't been out there very long, and as I have said many, many times, it's almost like a dream, like it's really not real. 2 of those men, the automatic riflemen, of course, were like me. They were good targets. If a guy is shooting with an automatic weapon, the enemy would like to get him first. In the early part of the 4 hours that I was trying to do this job, I lost him. But the other 2 guys, they kept working with me, and one of them particularly, he kept pretty close to me to try to keep the Japanese off of me. And one of those pillboxes I'd been trying to reach, I saw where they had been firing their weapons. They didn't have any smokeless ammunition. Ours wasn't total, but it was better than theirs. So smoke was curling up out of the top of it, and I sort of figured they had a breathing hole up there or something, you know. So I crawled around to the side where they couldn't see me because one side of the pillbox was solid, and got up on top. And they had a air vent pipe up there, and it was just the right size that my flamethrower nozzle fit down in it. So I was ready to fire. And they knew that, I guess, because they came charging out of that pillbox. I don't know, 4 or 5 of them. I don't know. A bunch, anyway, with their weapons and bayonets to get me. And I got them first. I was just reading recently where flamethrower goes all the way back to the Roman Empire. They didn't work quite as like ours, but they had them. And they were just as vicious then as they are, or were then. Its effectiveness was that once it hit its target, it burned all the oxygen out of the air. Lungs collapsed and people were gone. It was a terrible, terrible weapon. Don't ask me how I did it. I don't know how I did it. But in 4 hours, I knocked out 7 of those things. Much of it I don't remember. And I attribute that to fear. Absolutely. Once you got in behind the pillboxes, well, then we had the advantage. So in getting those 7 pillboxes out of the way, that, according to my citation, opened the lane that enabled us to go on through.
I mean, think about, there's another minute and then we'll get Chris Woodbridge, but think about the, think about just the amount of luck. How many guys stood up, peered outside of a fighting position, and got drilled in the head. And here, he's got a flamethrower, which would have got everybody's attention. You know, he asked guys who fought, what did you not want around you? 1, tanks, because they were shit magnets. Right, mortars started dropping anytime a tank rolled up next to you. In fact, when you hear Cal Humphrey's interview, and you'll hear that this week or next week, PFC on Iwo Jima, he gets wounded. I want to say 19 or 20 days into the fight, he gets wounded talking to a tank. Right, as he goes over to point out a target, and then they drop mortars and whatever else they could shoot at it. And that's how he gets wounded. But just imagine the amount of metal luck he had. that the shit just missed him, right? To destroy seven different bunkers with a flame with a flamethrower.
When I received the Medal of Honor, the day after President Truman presented it, I went in the office of the Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. And I can't tell you which place I was more frightened, standing before the President or facing the Commandant of the Marine Corps. But he was almost God in the Marine Corps. He was also a Medal of Honor recipient from Guadalcanal. So he knew what we were facing. But he said to me, as I stood there, very sternly, "That medal does not belong to you." He said it belongs to all the Marines who did not get to come home. "And don't ever do anything that would tarnish that medal." The medal represents what the country has always stood for. Sacrifice. The day I was born, on October the 2nd, 1923, I was handed a gem that is absolutely impossible to buy. That was my freedom. Can't pay for it. There's not enough money in the world. So this medal, to me, stands for sacrifice and service.
Woody Williams. There's a very cool image in that video of John Bazelon's grave on Iwo Jima. Yeah, not his grave where I don't know if his family had him buried in when they disinterred all the bodies on Iwo Jima. I don't know if they had him buried. I'll find out here in a minute. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Chris Woodbridge is going to join us next. We're talking about February issue as well as the digital archives are a treasure, an absolute positive treasure for the Marine Corps. And if you've never used them, it's one of the great benefits of being a member of the Marine Corps Association and subscribing to the Gazette, which is reading when these things come about. You're going to read stories from people who wrote, after the battles, right? I, we, those pronouns, he, not, very few they, all right? Very few they. All right, we'll quick break. And Chris Woodbridge coming up next.
Been in touch with or had been seen.